Demon Howl listeners, round four of the season takes place by the Yangtze River in the most populous city in China, Shanghai. Since 2004, the F1 drivers have negotiated the spiraling 270-degree turn 1 and 2 at the aesthetically designed Shanghai International Circuit. Currently, in the 2014 season, the Mercedes-Benz team is still shining. There's a new principal at Ferrari, and the defending driver's champion is defending himself against his new Aussie teammate. Will fortune continue to be bright for the Merck boys? Will Vettel throw a temper tantrum now that the spotlight isn't on him? Grab a cold Qingdao and stay tuned, listeners. This is Desiree, and this is your F1 Weekly Chinese Grand Prix Racecast. Yihao Zhaozhen.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 654, April 29th, 2014. Nasser?
This edition of F1 Weekly podcast is brought to you by Panda Express, offering delicious Beijing beef and Shanghai noodles. Chop chop!
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Kimi Raikkonen not too happy by questions of his motivation. Why did Ferrari pick Mariachi? And will Red Bull surge back to the front in Europe? Of course, stay tuned for Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi. And we've got, of course, 50 words from the F1 Weekly Forum. And this week's edition, we have Tech Talk with Tim. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. And let's not forget, in the goodie bag, we have a very delicious motorsports mantra.
And that mantra is outstanding.
Thank you, sir.
So, here we are, post-China. We're heading back to Europe, but we have to discuss and recap this. Of course, a lot of people were expecting the same excitement as Bahrain. That is really hard to repeat. But still, once again, Mercedes is the dominateur.
Yes, the only question now is, are you ready for LCH number 2, or do you think we're going to have number 5 for you-know-who?
Well. Number 5 would be very, very hard, but we have seen Red Bull beginning to pick up the pace, as we might say in New York, and certainly with the two racetracks coming up, well, Barcelona still has some long straights, but when we get to Monaco, I think Red Bull will have the advantage, maybe.
Yes, they're closing in. LCH better win a few more races before Sebastian gets his first of the season.
Absolutely, absolutely. And he's definitely going to be winning more races.
Oh, yeah.
The Mercedes is phenomenal. Nico Rosberg running into some bad luck this last Grand Prix. And those things are going to happen. Also, I was very impressed with Fernando Alonso, and it's interesting, we're only 4 races into the season. People are questioning Kimi Raikkonen's motivation. Domenicali is out, which we sort of hoped would happen because in the end, they needed to reshuffle some things. Now we have some guy who was heading the car sales department of North America taking over a Formula One team. I really don't know what that's all about, but well, they wanted to keep it in la familia.
Oh, of course, of course. But remember, you know, once upon a time, there was another Italian who was head of marketing in New York, nothing to do with motor racing. And then Luciano Benetton called him and said, hey, Flavio, you want to go to a Grand Prix in Australia? And he said, bravo, bravo.
Bravo, bravo, fisico. Yes, no, I agree. But I'm having a hard time seeing any kind of Flavio Briatore in this guy.
No, yeah, me too. You know, and the first day he showed up, I think it was Friday practice, and there's a lot of video shots of him with his glasses. I mean, I was thinking of your verbiage you use all the time. He was looking like a hipster.
Yeah, yeah. But if you're going to be team principal, you shouldn't need sunglasses to make you look like a hipster. But he took them off the next day. Everybody's happy, and I'm happy for him. I mean, for goodness sakes, becoming team principal at La Scuderia is a big coup.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, Luca was in his 20s when he was brought in the early 70s. But, you know, Luca was connected to the Agnelli family. So all these people who get these big jobs are well connected. Some of them do very well. But I don't think Ferrari's problem was Stefano Domenicali. I don't think he was designing the engine of a car. But I think they need a complete package. And whether this guy can bring some people, only time will tell. Like you said, some people are questioning Kimi Raikkonen's motivation. Ferrari must be wondering, what did they do now again?
I completely agree. Domenicali was actually a great guy, did a pretty good job. Let's not forget, they've come close to winning the championship a number of times with Fernando.
Yes.
This close. So Domenicali must be doing a pretty good job. I think the problem is their aero package. The engine is pretty much similar to the Renault, not enough straight line speed. So Domenicali, you're right, did not have anything to do with it, but he is the scapegoat. And I think Domenicali did it really out of the love for the Scuderia.
No, I think, Clark, it was one of those classic corporate world things, you know, submit your resignation and get this package, or I'm here to fire you on the spot.
Right, right. But anyway, so big changes. I'm excited about it. We had an exciting qualifying. We had some rain, mistiness. We were hoping for a little reshuffle of the usual suspects. I don't know. What were your thoughts on qualifying?
Well, you know, once a pattern is set, then, you know, you don't get a lot of surprises. Last year, we knew who was going to be on pole, who was going to win the race. Now the faces and names have changed. So, you know, till somebody really rattles Mercedes' cage, which I don't expect in the next few races, I think it's just going to be Lewis Hamilton or Nico Rosberg. They got the thing going very well.
Yes, they do. And I think most people are hoping and praying for a Nico Rosberg blow up. Because right now, Lewis Hamilton seems to have it under control. The cage rattling is pretty exciting. And Nico Rosberg eventually, the start of one of these Grand Prix, could make a very big mistake and take both cars out.
That's very possible, and frustration gets to the very best, as we have seen in the past. But I think that Lewis had some issues in Australia. What goes around comes around every season. Now we have 19, 20 races. Luckily for drivers, we don't have the DNS we used to have in the 60s and 70s and 80s. But I think you mentioned bad luck for Nico. I think the season will prove, and the following season, that his biggest bad luck is his teammate.
Yeah, I completely agree. Nico Rosberg looked to be a pretty good match to Lewis Hamilton. But now that the new package for 2014 has come out, it seems to favor Lewis Hamilton a little bit better. I don't know what it is, but Lewis Hamilton is getting a lot out of this car, and the proof is when he starts this Grand Prix, in one lap, he's got over a two-second lead. It's very impressive.
He is, you know, and I heard that last year, Niki Lauda sat down with him and told him, you know, don't come to races with your dog and your Hollywood entourage, and apparently a lot of that has been cut from his caravanserai, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
So
no.
Maybe he's more focused. The guy is extremely talented, like Kimi Raikkonen, when he gets going, that's for sure.
No, I agree. And it's going to be a great season. The only problem is it could be a Mercedes season all the way through, like we had McLaren in 1988 winning, I can't remember, 15 out of 16 races.
Exactly.
So it's going to be very interesting. Let's talk about qualifying real quickly. I was very surprised to see both Jenson Button and Kevin Magnussen out in Q2. We were all talking at the beginning of the season that McLaren, Ron Dennis is back, and it looked like they were going to take a step forward, and it just didn't happen.
No, I think it's going to take time, and for sure, Kevin Magnussen's beginner's luck is over now. But the kid is very talented, and I think there's a lot of speed left in Jenson Button. So I do expect them to be doing much better in the second half, but I think it's going to take time for the walking wonders to work its way to the top step of the podium.
Well, I think the biggest problem is they're not getting all the data from Mercedes that they used to get. Those days are over, and they're probably now focused on what to do with these new rules and what they're going to do when they get the new Honda motor for 2015.
I think there's a chill all over Woking because rumors keep growing that when Honda comes, when they open the package, they're going to see, oops, Nando is included.
And there are rumors that Fernando's back in town.
Yeah.
So, yes, and some of the guys at McLaren have been caught with a Spanish-English dictionary.
Oh, geez.
Yep.
I thought you were going to say a Telefonica text machine.
No. The other thing, it's interesting because now Jenson Button and Kevin Magnussen are really duking it out with Toro Rosso. And I'm very impressed on how well Toro Rosso has adapted to the Renault Package compared to Lotus or Caterham, for that matter.
Yeah.
They are very competitive. They're in the top 10 almost all the time now.
And I got to tell you, I'm really impressed by Daniel Kvyat. I mean, the kid is doing very well.
He is doing very well, very mature. Unfortunately, this time Jean-Marc Vergne gets into Q3, where Daniel Kvyat does not. He managed 13th. Very, very impressive. And, of course, the big surprise for everybody, and this is what started it, is Kimi Raikkonen doesn't get out of Q2. Nasser, what's going on?
You know, I really don't understand this, Clark. Somebody has to put a baseball bat to my head for me to understand this. Now, here is a kid who went from basically 1 year of motor racing to Formula One, from Formula Renault to Formula One, scored a point on his debut, pretty much ruined Nicky Heidfeld's Formula One career because he was the McLaren boy at that time. And then, you know, he was so impressive in McLaren days. He wins his first ever race for Ferrari, wins the championship in his first year with them. And then, you know, he can't warm up the tires. You know, obviously, I don't know what goes on with the racing car and all that. But, you know, for somebody with all that talent, with all that success, I just don't get how this thing is happening. And I also don't understand. You know, we said this many times last year when rumors were that Kimi may go to Ferrari. I mean, I said this many times. If $50 million a year is not motivating a guy, how can you expect him to be motivated at $15 million?
Yeah, and not only that, but, you know, on the other hand, you have to think about Kimi Raikkonen's management. Do you really want Fernando Alonso as a teammate?
Well, you know, I don't think Kimi Raikkonen cares for anybody. I think he's a tough hombre on that front. I don't think he has a problem there. But I just cannot believe Ferrari would not go looking into the future, get Nico Hülkenberg. I mean, he was race ready. He had some years of experience. He is very quick, and I just don't get it.
No, it's very bizarre, and I think now Daniel Ricciardo has proved himself. And if Ferrari has any thoughts for the future, Hülkenberg or Ricciardo really should be on their agenda.
Absolutely, and keep in mind, Kimi Raikkonen was paid $25 million, I believe, not to drive for them. And just to get him back, it's mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling, I have to admit. So what was also very impressive, of course, we had Pastor Maldonado, who was supposed to take a 5-grid penalty but he doesn't because there's some technical issues. He winds up not qualifying, not running in quali, starts 22nd, and there was a lot of talk about, well, if that's the case, should the five-place grid penalty get moved up to the next race?
Well, all I can tell you about Pastor Maldonado, he is the star of today's motorsports mantra, and that's all I will say.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm glad he's starring somewhere because Romain Grosjean gets in Q3. The Lotus is now starting to fire, starting to spark.
Here's another guy who could have gone to Ferrari and done very well.
I agree. Very fast, very quick. Has made some mistakes, but he's learned from those mistakes, and that's what you want to see. No, outstanding stuff. Obviously, I think another great story, and I don't think we're even talking about it enough, is Williams really coming out this season. Really impressive stuff from Valtteri Bottas and Felipe Massa. Felipe Massa qualified sixth, Valtteri Bottas right behind him in seventh. The Williams Mercedes is looking pretty good as long as they can stay out of trouble at the start of the Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's a pretty good tag team between Bottas and Massa. And they have a nice mix, you know, a guy with a lot of experience, still very hungry because of all these messages, who is faster than him and who is behind him. And then in Bottas, there's a very talented young kid also from Finland. So that's a good combo, and I hope, you know, they see some success.
But in the end, Lewis Hamilton on pole position. Nobody had any doubts about this. Nico Rosberg not having a great weekend, just couldn't put it together. And Daniel Ricciardo in P2, Sebastian Vettel in P3. That was exciting to see the Red Bulls back in the top three for qualifying, showing some good pace, especially in China, because those straights are really, really long.
Yes, and LCH is now number one in pole positions by British drivers, going ahead of Jim Clark, and now only behind Schumacher, Senna, and Vettel to be fourth on the all-time list. Not bad for a driver who started in 2007, and obviously very amazing for Vettel also to be in the top three. Now, your favorite, LCH, has won a race in pole every year since his dramatic debut in 2007 with McLaren. If only the Chinese pebbles were replaced by asphalt, if you remember that.
One of my favorite moments in my life.
It is one of the great moments in motor racing history. You know, what is so amazing, in these days, everywhere we have these tarmac and this and that, and that was the only place where they had these kitty litter marbles.
But it made for great television.
Yeah, and great motor racing history, that's for sure.
Yeah. So I thought this was a pretty exciting qualifying with the rain and everything. The rain didn't really mix it up as I suspected it would. And sure enough, it's the usual suspects in the end. Fernando Alonso really doing a great job with a piece of shit car, as far as I'm concerned, in qualifying fifth, where Kimi Raikkonen could only manage 11th. So there you have it. I still say Fernando, bravo, bravo, bravo.
Yeah, you know, I think the best way for him to get out of his Ferrari contract and go to Honda powered McLaren is, say, at Monza, my Ferrari is like an Iveco truck. they'll fire him like they did the professor.
Of course. Yes. But unfortunately, the Comandatore is not there anymore.
Yeah, but I got to tell you something. You know, I saw a race, a little bit rain at Indy 1 year. And, you know, I remember at that time Kimi was leading and spray, you cannot even see the second place car. So I'm not a big fan. I feel sorry for people who come to races and there's a rain race. Unless
that's true.
I'm sure some of them like that.
I know. You're such a humanitarian, Nasser.
Oh.
So we had pretty good weather. Of course, China, you know, it's always a lot of smog, poor visibility. I was hoping we were going to get an exciting start, an exciting race after Bahrain. A lot of people wanted Bahrain 2, or the sequel to Bahrain.
Yeah, and you know, Nico is not going to roll over and play dead for LCH, and their rivalry and friendship go back, you know, when they were young kids racing in karting. But you know, this I was expecting at least some sort of a, you know, run up on the first few laps between LCH and Nico. But when Nico was stolen warm up lap, no telemetry, I just knew the party was over for him.
Yeah, very hard to run a modern Grand Prix without telemetry these days.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible. But what's impressive, he does an outstanding job. I mean, his start was a la Mark Webber, but nevertheless, he does recover during the race and does a fantastic job. For me, Lewis Hamilton's start was fantastic. Sebastian Vettel had a pretty good start. So did Daniel Ricciardo. I thought Felipe Massa had a fantastic start. He looked like a Fernando out there.
Yeah, and some of these onboard shots from different drivers at the start, that was very impressive.
It was very impressive. It was a great start. I was impressed on how Fernando banged wheels with Massa. Those cars, they were pretty tough. I like banging wheels.
The little push and shove is pretty good sometimes.
Yeah.
It really sucks when it takes out one of the drivers. Then you
I agree.
Have a good race.
Absolutely. Lap one, Lewis Hamilton holds the lead at the end of the first lap. And it's a terrible start for Nico Rosberg, who drops down to seventh after clashing with the Williams of Valtteri Bottas. So there you have it. Not Kimi Raikkonen. By lap two, Sebastian Vettel is 2.4 seconds behind Lewis Hamilton. Lewis Hamilton, in one lap, you could see the gap building so fast because the Mercedes is so fast, and Lewis Hamilton is doing an outstanding job. And this is Lewis Hamilton's race. It's in the bag. He leads from start to finish. It's a fantastic Grand Prix. Nico Rosberg does a pretty good job in clawing back slowly but surely. We do get some good fights that I find very impressive on lap 23 when Daniel Ricciardo is trying to pass Sebastian Vettel. Very fun stuff. By then, Lewis Hamilton has an 8-second lead ahead of Fernando Alonso. Not an exciting race, but we do have some good battles going on. What do you think?
Well, no, I think it's very good. And, you know, the Williams battles are always exciting. The Red Bull, you know, the new numero uno is doing very good. I love that battle. While Lewis Hamilton was having a great run at the front, his ex-BFF, Senor Sutil, was the first retirement, and looks like it was third time DNF for Adrian Sutil.
Right. My favorite moment, of course, as usual, is when the team tells Sebastian Vettel that he's got to let Daniel Ricciardo go through. And then Sebastian Vettel on lap 25 is not very happy and says, what kind of tires is Daniel Ricciardo on? So, poor Vettel. You know, he was bound to have one of these years. You can't become world champion every year.
Yeah. And, you know, it was tough luck for Daniel Ricciardo or Ricardo, whatever the name may be, until lap 26 when he passed Senor Sebastian Vettel. You know, some people are wondering if Christian Horner reports to Sebastian Vettel.
Very true. Very true.
And what I hear is Red Bull is now building a new chassis for their Wunderkind, and it is really only a matter of time before we see finger pointing in Parc Fermé.
It's possible. It's possible. But I expect Sebastian Vettel and Ricciardo to do well in Monaco, possibly challenging for the win against Mercedes. And, you know, I'm hoping Ferrari picks it up a little bit and can challenge for another podium, because we are going to España, our favorite place.
Oh, absolutely. And Daniel, you know, from Perth, Western Australia, is definitely doing a massive fair dinkum job. And it will be interesting how intense cage rattling will be when Bastian gets going. Sebastian Vettel, as we all know, does not like second place, especially behind an Aussie mate. If these two start trading paint and do a couple of Turkish delights, as we saw between Vettel and Webber some years ago, that will only play in the hand of the man who is leading at Mercedes right now.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, and I think I have a feeling that if they catch up, you know, catching up to a car and a team is one thing, passing and pulling ahead is different. But I think the rivalry between Sebastian Vettel and Daniel Ricciardo, if it is allowed, and I have some doubts on that, it may just take points from each other and the championship to Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah. No, another good moment for me was lap 34 when Sebastian Vettel gets perturbed by Kobayashi because Kobayashi is almost a lap behind, but he passes the German after having pitted. And Sebastian Vettel sort of waves his hand saying, what in the world is this sushi-making dude doing? It was just the aggravation was spilling out onto the track.
You know, Clark, what I've seen over the years, right from the days of Ayrton Senna, Michael Schumacher, and pretty obvious with Sebastian Vettel, if these top mega stars of motor racing, if they are not on the front row and they are, for whatever reason, starting somewhere between row 4 or row 8, whatever it may be, they run in their quest to get to the front, they run into a lot of issues.
Yeah, no.
Remember the time when Michael Schumacher slapped Sato?
And I was just thinking about that.
Yeah, so it's amazing, you know, how these top mega stars behave when they are not where they think they should be. And very rightly, they really belong in the front.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I also thought towards the end of the Grand Prix that Fernando Alonso holding off Daniel Ricciardo was a pretty good feat. I thought Ricciardo was going to pass Fernando, but Fernando knew that the Scuderia and the people of Italy needed a podium to give him hope.
Yeah. You know, the only thing that will really, really excite me for next season, if Nando is at McLaren Honda and Lewis Hamilton comes back to
That's crazy, man.
No, man, I tell you, if these two guys were driving for Mercedes today, oh, man, that would be that. Then we have 19 Bahrain Grand Prix. Let me tell you that.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. But see, that we don't deserve that kind of excitement.
Oh, well, we take
no, I know.
Now, did you enjoy the Eddie Irvine pit stop made by Felipe Massa?
Yes, I was going to mention that poor Felipe, some really bad luck there. I'm not sure if if they had the wrong tires and they looked like they had a problem with the nut. And Felipe Massa is shaking his head. He raises his visor. He begins to weep and cry and heave. Yeah, brutal. And as a matter of fact, that ruined his race completely, because when he finally did get out, I think he was like 22nd or 23rd.
Yeah, it was almost 60 seconds of pit stop, which will kill your day any day in Formula One these days.
Yeah, no, that was brutal.
Yeah, what really impressed me by when these guys were making tire stop, our good friend LCH is not known for being an easy rider on tires. He's more of a pushy Paul kind of character. In Shanghai, he was able to do more laps than any other driver who started on self tires. Maybe we are seeing a kinder and gentler LCH, but still very fast.
That's true, too, and I think the car design might have a lot to do with it. Let's not forget it. This is a works team. Mercedes has designed the engine, the chassis, everything, and they did it way ahead of everybody else. That's what's very impressive, and that's why they've really upped the ante over Renault. So, and let's not forget, LCH is getting older. He's getting more mature. He's getting more experience. This could very well be LCH's number 2 world championship.
Yeah, very true. And talking about your Dios Mios, Nando, he gave Ferrari their first podium of the season, and of course, not surprising, outperforming his teammate, the Iceman, who is now melting race by race into Felipe Massa of Finlandia.
Yes, and of course, now the press, they brought back the motivation question, which is really rude. And I think Kimi Raikkonen, luckily for the press, he's fairly quiet, because if he was Niki Lauda back in the day, it would be the F-bomb every other word.
Yeah. It's but I'll tell you, Ferrari does not have the best package, we all know. But, I am convinced, even if the car stays the way it is, Fernando Alonso will find a way to win a race or two.
I hope so.
And if he wins 2 or 3 races and Kimi Raikkonen does not win a race this season, then Luca should ask for a refund of his salary.
Well, I don't know about that, but I certainly hope that... Well, the biggest problem is, if Kimi Raikkonen can't do anything with Ferrari this season, where would he go? His days are almost done.
Well, there is the World 600 NASCAR race.
That's true. And the camper... Camping World. That was exciting.
Yeah.
So, and since Robert Kubica is always crashing, there's always some place for him over there.
Yeah. Isn't Raikkonen the oldest driver in Grand Prix racing now?
No.
Who is it?
I think it's not Jenson Button.
It's either him or Button.
Yeah, one of the two. We don't have any very old people anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but even Fernando's not that young. He's just extra machismo.
He is. There's no question about it.
Yes, so... A very exciting Grand Prix with Lewis Hamilton. Nico Rosberg doing an outstanding job and getting up and finishing in second place, really keeping the fight between him and Lewis in the championship, Fernando Alonso in third, Daniel Ricciardo in fourth, Sebastian Vettel fifth, Hülkenberg sixth, Valtteri Bottas seventh, Kimi Raikkonen eighth, Perez ninth, and Kvyat 10. That's a pretty good top 10. Very interesting. I'm very impressed with Daniel Kvyat, who was out-qualified by Jean-Éric Vergne, but in the end, gets into the final points-paying position.
Yeah, you know, Kvyat reminds me of Sergio Perez's first season. I really thought Sergio will bomb, and I really thought this kid will struggle. But man, very, very impressive for both these kids.
I agree. So we are moving to España. We know Fernando gets a lot of support there. Blue flags will be out. What are your thoughts on what to expect in Spain?
I think if there is a I expect a Mercedes victory, but if there is a non-Mercedes victory, it will be, you know, the red car.
I concur. Let's just hope Pastor Maldonado won't be, taking out anybody that's significant.
Yeah, like I said, he's the star of the mantra, so we'll find out there.
Thank you very much. So there you have it. Would you like to take a break and go into Mondial?
Yeah, let's take a quick break. Let's be on the Dave Ruback program, and we should return.
Take five.
Attention, Formula One fans. How would you like to have access to an all-inclusive, USA-based Formula One website that provides discounts and reviews on Formula One ticket, apparel, travel, and collectibles companies? Go to F1FanAdvisor.com and see for yourself. Whether it's finding the highest-rated Formula One Momento stores, ticketing companies, or apparel stores, F1FanAdvisor.com is the place to find it. Plus, F1FanAdvisor.com has negotiated some serious discounts for USA-based fans with select companies on their site, so check it out now. And for a limited time, F1FanAdvisor.com is offering their free report, The 5 Costly Mistakes to Avoid When Purchasing Formula One Tickets, so you can avoid the ticket-buying pitfalls that most F1 fans make. Go to www.F1FanAdvisor.com to see how big of a discount you can get. It only takes seconds, and it's completely free. Get your discounts, plus the free report, The 5 Costly Mistakes to Avoid When Purchasing Formula One Tickets, absolutely free. Race to www.F1FanAdvisor.com now.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with the king, the guru, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards. Today we shall look at racing action from the past two weekends. We start with the most recent action, starting from Argentina and their first ever MotoGP at the new Rio Hondo circuit. Marc Marquez has now equaled the achievement of the great Giacomo Agostini from the 1971 season. The young Spaniard, rookie world champion last year, has now won the first three races of the 2014 season, all from pole position. In Sunday's race, he dropped back to fifth at the start, while there was tremendous battle going around in the early stages between Danny Pedrosa, Jorge Lorenzo, and Dr. Valentino Rossi. When it was all said and done, Marc Marquez was on top step of the podium ahead of his Repsol Honda teammate Danny Pedrosa. Jorge Lorenzo made it an all-Espanol podium by finishing third, very impressive. During the race telecast, it was mentioned that since Marquez came into MotoGP last year, listen to this, Mr. Rogers, he has appeared on the podium in all but two races. This is an incredible start to any motorsports career, and to do it against champions like Rossi, Lorenzo, and experienced teammate Danny Pedrosa is very, very impressive. He has pretty much made Pedrosa the Barrichello or Massa of MotoGP.
That's good enough
for winning races, but not the championship. And round four is next weekend at Jerez, where Jerez de la Frontera, where Dr. Miguel and I spent some time in January. It's a fantastic circuit. I would highly recommend, if somebody is in the area, to go and check it out. And of course, Argentina being Argentina, big motorsports fans there. And there was a huge, huge crowd at the circuit, which is by the seaside. Very nice. From Argentina, we go to sweet home Alabama, where Neil Young may not be welcome, but F1 Weekly familiar member Christopher DeHardy was, where he was reporting for motorsports.com, and we wish him all the best in his motorsport journalism career. Aussie mate Will Power was on pole for Penske team. Race winner was the man from Florida, Ryan Hunter-Reay. Marco Andretti was second. Scott Dixon was third after finishing second in each of the previous four races in Alabama. Pole man Power was fifth and still leads the championship with 125 points, 18 ahead of Ryan Hunter-Reay.
Now, let's not forget that Juan Pablo Montoya is now back in single-seaters with the IndyCar series, and how did he perform this weekend?
He was competitive, but then he went off the track, and I was watching on the web, and you know they always have a chat room on the side, and this female reporter was interviewing Montoya, and one smarty pants wrote on that column that she should have asked him if he's having jet dryer nightmares.
That's so nice.
Yeah, of course. Okay, from Alabama, we go to Aragon in Spain. Formula Renault 3.5 series in action at the Motorland Park. Carlos Sainz Jr. won the opening race on Saturday over Russian racer Nikolai Marcenko. Sunday's event was won by Oliver Rowland, first win for the English rookie. Sainz leads the championship with 62 points. Rowland is second on 49 points. You know, both Carlos Sainz and Daniel Kvyat have been in the Red Bull program for a few years. And up until 2 years ago, Sainz was looking like the main hombre. And the way he's going this year in Formula Renault 3.5 and the way Daniel Kvyat is doing, I'm a little concerned for your fellow Français, Jean-Éric Vannes, because Marco Machetti comes out very quickly.
Yes, I know that Marco Machetti does come out very quickly. And that's how Toro Rosso works. They want young apprentices performing at the peak of the pinnacle of motorsports. And I agree. I mean, Sainz Jr. is looking very, very nice.
Yeah, and a very nice kid also. I've met him a few times. He's interviewed him a few times. Very classy young kid, and his father is also very nice.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. Gracias. Formula Renault Euro Cup, they were also, you know, the sideline event, the sideshow. Young Dutch talent Nyck de Vries took pole position for the season opener. Sharing the front row with him was Aurélien Panis. His papito won a Formula One race at Monaco some years ago.
Yeah, that was exciting. Gauloise Ligier Gitane.
Oh, yeah. De Vries went on to win the race. His manager is Anthony Hamilton, and we all know who that is.
Papa.
Yeah, Papa. De Vries is in the McLaren driver development program. You know, Ron Dennis has said that Nyck de Vries is the only driver apart from Lewis Hamilton that Ron himself selected and has helped him. This guy was unbelievable in karting. And now, I don't know what happened in single-seaters, but this is his third year in Formula Renault. But, you know, from a 15-year-old a few years ago, now he's 19. But I think it was Ron and McLaren behind him. If he can keep going the way he's going now, he may still make it to Formula One.
It's very possible. Vitantonio Liuzzi made it to Formula One.
Yeah, but, you know, Red Bull really gave him the shaft, you know.
You think so?
The way they put Christian Kleen for a few races, then it was going to be him. And then Christian Kleen did pretty decent, so they kept him for a... That's not the way... The guy was very good, you know. He won a lot of... I think in 2004, when Michael Schumacher won a lot of races to start the season, he was doing the same thing in Formula 3000, which was the final year of Formula 3000 before it became GP2. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now let's take a look at the weekend of April 20th. British Tintops, British Touring Cars. Round one was at Silverstone. And, of course, they have three races per weekend, and this time they had three different winners. Jason Plato won the opening race in his MG. Mr. Todorov, won the second race, also in an MG. And Honda man Gordon Shedden was the winner in race three. Now, some news from British Tintops. We move to German Tintops. Drivers in DTM have been busy doing preseason testing at Hockenheimring. German driver Marco Wittmann set the pace on the opening day in his BMW. Second day of testing saw Sacramento driver B. Joey Hand keep the Munich mark on top of the timesheet. And Mr. Robert Wickens, whom we like to call Pronto from Toronto, put Mercedes on top of the final day of testing. Robert, in just my humble opinion, is one of the top talents in motor racing who should be in Formula One. He and Jean-Éric Kuhn were teammates at Carlin a few years ago, and Wickens came out on top after a hard-fought season. European Formula 3, interesting news came out just yesterday that they are thinking of, you know, Jean Todt and Gerhard Berger are pushing European Formula 3 very much, you know, against the tide of all good drivers going to GP3. Now right. They are thinking of doing a sort of a winter series in Middle East. So kind of like, remember the Hapidos Asia some years ago?
Oh, yeah. And no, I think those are great ideas, including some of the Toyota racing that's in New Zealand in their summer or winter.
Yeah. So Silverstone was the scene of the opening round of the 2014 FIA Formula European Formula 3 Championship. Son of Stig, Tom Blomqvist, won the first of three races of the weekend from pole position in his VW-powered Team Carlin car. 17-year-old Francais Esteban Ocon was the winner of the second race, and Ferrari protege Antonio Fuoco won the final race of the weekend. From Silverstone, we go to south of France, which would mean Le Castellet, which would lead to mile-long Mistral Strait, and that means Paul Ricard circuit and fantastic racing location. Sir, have you ever been to Paul Ricard?
You know, I haven't been to Paul Ricard. Now, don't get me wrong. I've had Ricard, I've had Pernod, but I've never been to Bernie's.
I love Paul Ricard pasties for sure. You know, I've been to Bondol, which is a small coastal town near Marseille and Paul Ricard. So anyway, Paul Ricard was the scene of World Touring Cars. Ivan Muller won the first race in his Citroën. His fellow Francais and teammate Sebastian Loeb charged from last place to finish second. Loeb had qualified on pole but was given the Rosa Park treatment for a technical infringement. In the second race, their teammate Pachito, also known as Jose Maria Lopez, came from dead last to win the race. So this is turning into a big battle between Jose Maria Lopez and your man Loeb, Sebastian Loeb. And I have to say this, you know, lately I've been watching a lot of these races, and they had a race in Marrakesh a few weeks ago on YouTube. And you can watch the whole race like that. So if anybody is interested, I would recommend that. Now, you remember Frank Montagny?
Of course, Frank Montagny. We met him at Laguna Seca.
Yes, he will be back in a Grand Prix next month. Instead of going around Tabac Corner, he will be racing around Georgetown in the Grand Prix of Indy, courtesy of Andretti Autosports. Montagny at one time was a Briatore love child and also raced briefly in Formula One and for Peugeot in sports car racing. And Peugeot, now they are going to Dakar, and I think Carlos Sainz Sr. will be one of the piloto.
Yeah, you mean the senior, not the...
Yeah, the senior, of course.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and I've seen the Peugeot. It looks very, very nice, very aggressive-looking SUV. Well, one thing, and it's funny because Peugeot has had some financial difficulties. 14% of the company has been purchased by a Chinese car company, but they continue to race. Their junior rally series is still going strong. Obviously, the Pikes Peak car was phenomenal. This is very impressive stuff, and I'm glad Peugeot is still in motorsports.
Yeah, that's good. And recently, they signed a huge $1 billion contract to build cars for the Chinese market. So let's just hope you know, line of the road survives.
Exactly.
Yeah, and but I'll tell you, you know, one of the most beautiful sedan I've ever seen in my life was the beautiful Peugeot 504.
Pininfarina, beautiful.
Absolutely, fantastic design. And here, we come to famous last word, and you got to pay attention to this. Here's a gentleman saying, and I quote, "Overtaking with DRS is like giving Picasso Photoshop," end of quote. And this is from the acrobat himself, the Mega Monty, Juan Pablo Montoya.
Poor Pablo.
He's a good character, a tremendous racing talent for sure.
Yes, no, and I loved it when he first got to Formula One with Williams, and all of a sudden he was giving Schumacher trouble, and everybody was going, yay! God, it was exciting.
Yeah, I watched his British Grand Prix victory and Italian Grand Prix victory last few days on the web. Very impressive. But I have to say, you know, as incredibly talented he is, his teammate Kimi Raikkonen had his number and his area code when they were teammates at McLaren. So that really shows how good Kimi is when he is on form.
I agree, but that was a long time ago now, sir.
That is correct, senor.
Yes. So, excellent. Another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Let's take a quick break and let Tim from Tech Talk take it away.
Hello, listeners. I hope you are enjoying the new season and the on-track action. I think I'm long overdue to discuss with you an important technological device which, although it contributes nothing to outright speed, no driver would ever be caught without. In fact, it's on clear display every time the driver enters or exits a car. Can you guess what I'm talking about? It's the Hans device. The Hans device, which stands for Head and Neck Support, is the carbon fiber U-shaped piece that straps to each driver's helmet and hangs over the shoulders. The purpose of this device is to protect a driver's head from extreme forces in the event of an impact. I'll teach you how in a moment. Hans is used by drivers of many racing series and at all levels. It's nearly as ubiquitous as helmets, and for good reason. The Hans device was invented by Dr. Robert Hubbard in the 1980s, but didn't become well adopted until the 2000s, sadly, after many deaths from fractures of the lower skull occurred. In a front-end crash, the front of the car and the crash barriers begin to crush or crumple, and the rest of the car experiences deceleration, which brings the car's speed to zero. Let's look at what happens in a Hans-free crash scenario. The driver's head and helmet, which together have a mass of about 6 kilograms, which is 12 or 13 pounds, are free to pivot forward and backwards on the neck. As the car, and therefore the driver's body held in place by a seatbelt, begin to slow down in the crash, the head continues moving forward at full speed. Then, all at once, the head reaches the end of its forward travel as the neck becomes fully stretched, and the head must instantly slow to match the speed of the rest of the body. This period of severe deceleration puts massive stresses on the neck and the lower skull and has proven to be fatal many times. Now, let's pretend the driver has a Hans device. The Hans device is held in place because the seatbelt passes over the shoulders. During the crash, the car, driver's body, and the Hans device now begin to slow as the car and crash barriers crumple. The Hans device, attached to the helmet, causes that helmet and driver's head to begin to slow as well. Although the G-forces and stresses applied to the body are still very high, the head slows gradually instead of during a brief snapping instant like in the previous case. It's the difference between dropping a watermelon onto a pillow or onto a concrete floor. Even though both melons must decelerate to zero speed, the pillow begins to apply a decelerating force to the melon earlier and more smoothly. The concrete floor applies a much higher force at the last possible instant. By my calculations, assuming a 100 km per hour impact speed and 1 meter of crushable distance of crash barrier and car nose, deceleration of the car will be about 32 Gs, 32 times the force of gravity. This is what the head will experience with a Hans device. Without a Hans device, the head will decelerate over about 20 centimeters of neck swing length, subjecting the head to a deceleration of 160 Gs. According to Formula1.com, quote, in tests, Hans was shown to reduce typical head motion in an accident by 44%, the force applied to the neck by 86%, and the acceleration applied to the head by 68%, end quote. Here at Tech Talk, I certainly encourage any student taking a physics class to repeat my calculations. In road cars, airbags perform the same duty as Hans, causing the head to slow down over a larger distance, which is the thickness of an airbag, instead of allowing a rapid change of speed to occur, which would occur during a head-to-steering wheel impact. Well, I hope you've learned a lot today about crash safety and the need for technology and medical research to collaborate to help keep racing drivers and drivers like you and I safe. Remember, safety first. Thanks for listening.
Okay, we're back. Thank you, Tim. Another outstanding Tech Talk. It's all now clearer in my mind. Nass, let's spin the globe now in the other direction and do Motorsports Mantra.
Thank you, sir. Today's edition is actually called Maldonado Mantra. Castor came all the way from Venezuela. And like Alexander the Great, it was a case of Veni, Vidi, Vici. Just like the man from Macedonia, Maldonado conquered what came in his way. Championship in Italian Formula Renault, GP2, and a grand prize in Monmelo. But he added another word to his Veni, Vidi, Vici, Crashado. Like great motorsports warriors from other nations, among them Sato San and Paul Tracy, Maldonado has been crash-prone throughout his career. There was a crash in Monte Carlo under a yellow flag in a World Series by Renault event, which seriously injured a marshal. 4 years in GP2 resulted in one championship and numerous incidents, accidents, hints, and allegations. An impressive and maiden win ahead of Nando in Barcelona has been overshadowed by accidents with other drivers, latest with Esteban Gutierrez in Bahrain, who was left wondering, what was that? Some years ago in the opening round in Australia, Maldonado threw away a very important and much-needed points finish for Williams very late in the race. While chasing Nando, he went on the Willie Nelson program, Hello Walls. Even his own countrymen and El Presidente of that time were not spared embarrassing moments. Remember when he crashed his car during an exhibition in Caracas? That was really very sad. After going off track on Friday in China a couple of times, the only thing remaining is crashing into Romain Grosjean's car while exiting the Lotus garage. In the final analysis, if Ralph Nader was following Formula One, he would call Pastor Maldonado Corvair Maldonado, unsafe at any speed. Thank you for listening. Drive safely.
Nass, that was an outstanding mantra, and certainly I concur. Corvair Maldonado is now my new term.
Very good. GM would be proud of you.
That's true. That was great. Thank you very much. That was fantastic. We do have other things, but let's talk about España real quickly before I go to 50 words on the Chinese Grand Prix from the F1 Weekly Forum.
I can see Nando on the podium with two Mercedes drivers.
Yeah. Funny, huh? But I see the same thing. Fernando wants Ferrari to be happy, even though there are rumors that Fernando is moving on because he needs championships because he's getting old. And it's just been way too long. Ferrari has dropped the ball. I don't know. Where do you think Kimi Raikkonen is going to wind up?
He should be in the top 10 after... who has he been colliding with? Nico Hülkenberg lately or somebody else?
Somebody. But we'll see what happens. I think Kimi is going to shake the cobwebs off. You know, it's only 4 races, you know. It takes time.
Yeah. And, you know, they don't have a fast car... but we'll see how it works out. It will be nice to see, very nice to see a Williams on the podium, I'll tell you that.
I agree, completely. I'd love to see Felipe Massa get a podium. I would love to see Lewis Hamilton, Felipe Massa, and Fernando Alonso on the podium.
Okay, sir.
But don't forget, there's a couple of Red Bulls that are going to want that podium as well.
Si, senor.
Yes, okay. Let's go ahead and read 50 words on the Chinese Grand Prix. So here we go. I will delve into this really quickly. Kei Sin says, Mercedes show they're the new Red Bull while Ricciardo shows he's the new Vettel. Interesting that while the Merc engines are supposed to be all-conquering, we still find Ferrari and Renault up there. Meanwhile, Coulthard reminds us of the consequences of splintered rubber. Thank you, DC. Leon Bray says, bit of a procession without much action after lap one. Ricciardo has been having starting lessons from Weber, but was able to show Vettel what tough luck means. Great drive by Fred and Daniel. No miracle from Ron yet. Dr. Mark. Dull old race, but anything was going to be after Bahrain. Seb is coping with Danielle's cage rattling, but Lewis's smirk is getting under Brittany's skin. How many races before the pressure cooker blows? Fernando welcomed his new boss with a mature podium. Williams underperformed, while McLaren are clearly focusing on year one with Honda. From Ye, confirmation of just how good Alonso is on a weekend. Confirmation of just how good Ricciardo is. Vettel is shaken and stirred, shaping up to be a good season. Neon Zapper says, small changes to Fernando's car, but where's Kimi? No downforce for McLaren's, a bad pit stop for Massa, engine failure for Sauber, and Sebastian Vettel moves over for his teammate. But look at the Hulkster hitting P6 in the Force India, and Perez from P16 to P9, on to turn 13 in Spain. And Tricky Dick, rather boring. Mayonnaise! Seabass shows his true colors. Alonso can podium driving anything. LK and NR marriage about to be over. Please, if it's going to be boring, at least bring back the sound of horsepower. The current rules are lame-o, lame-o, lame-o. Eric for OK. Can't these guys count laps? Koala, take two. Horner to Vettel. Sebastian, let Danielle through. He is faster than you. And from Philip Pegler, I think everyone has summed it up beautifully, but I'd like to add a little gem for our friends over at Le Nascar in Charlotte. Daniel Ricciardo said during the preseason that he was choosing number 3 because it was his favorite number and because he had always been a fan of the late Dale Earnhardt. Enter Performance Racing Network's Mark Garrow, who stated that the Australian driver is forming a connection between F1 and NASCAR by sporting Earnhardt's stylized number 3 on his helmet for all the world to see. This is precisely the kind of remark that emphasizes the cultural gulf between F1 and other forms of motorsport and the inferiority complexes of some of the southern country boys in their lack of F1 knowledge so great that's all they can come up with. Bring on the Perrier, Ricky Bobby, and let's get us some celebrating Viva Le NASCAR. And Jackson says, coming to you live from deep in NASCAR country, I can vouch that the scene here is much different than it was 10 years ago. A lot of the NASCAR drivers are F1 fans, and you could see them occasionally tweeting about it to their rather large follower contingent, which only builds awareness. While F1 still has a long way to go before it's a mainstream sport in the US, not just the South, several factors have given the awareness of the series a bump, just to name a few. The US Grand Prix, the television deal with NBC Sports, social media outlets uniting fans, popular branding machines crossing the cultural gulf, such as Red Bull. Like I said, it still has a long way to go before it's mainstream, but the steps made in the last 10 years alone have been pretty big and more than I would have expected. Thank you, gentlemen. And that was some little editorializing from the boys on the forum. And I understand Jason Jackson is in the thick of it in the middle of the Carolinas. Nass, any final words?
Yeah, you know, this throwing of the checker earlier is not the first time it has happened. It has also happened where the race went on for a lap or two more, as it happened at Dijon, which was the Swiss Grand Prix of 1982. And some years ago in Brazil, Pele, the great football legend, also waved the checkered flag, I think, one lap for the end of the race. So, you know, all these people, whether they are waving the flag or driving race cars, they're all human. So there was a mistake every now and then.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I would do. You know that? You know you've got some ice cream and you're dying to share it with Kimi Raikkonen. Just end it one lap earlier.
Well, you know, no, I think you would do so if Nando is leading and the guy catching him up real fast on the final lap is LCH, then you're going to say, this is over.
You know what? You're absolutely correct.
Thank you,
sir. Let's hope that happens in España.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
That will be interesting. But no, very exciting stuff. As a matter of fact, I forgot all about the one lap early flag.
Yeah. And talking of Spania, I was there some years ago when Lewis Hamilton crashed late in the race. And there was, quite a sigh of relief from the grandstands, let me tell you that.
Oh, I could imagine. We'll see. You know, we might have a fresh winner in España. You never know what's going to happen. We could have alternator problems on the Mercedes. Things change fast in Formula One, Nasser.
Very true.
So, there you have it. Very good. I enjoyed the Grand Prix in China, that we've had a little bit of a break. And I do apologize to the listeners. Some of us have been super busy, and we have been able to put out the podcast as quickly as we can, but we will continue to always strive to do better.
Yes, sir.
Exactly. So there you have it, Nass. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
Bye-bye.